Yes, so I think I should be audible now, because there is a link which has been connected with the microphone here and the instrument. And this is the link we need to establish between the divine and ourselves. People often say that we don't hear, we don't see, we don't perceive the divine. Well, he has given us a wire, but we don't connect it. There's a very interesting line of the mother where she says, what is the psychic being, the secret entity, soul entity within us? She says, it is the psychic being is the wire that connects us, the divine, the generator, to the body, which is the lamp. So this is what I suddenly remembered, that well, without the psychic being, or experiencing the psychic being, the touch of the psychic being, the realization of the psychic being, in a certain sense, this yoga does not begin. So does it mean that we will not work or do anything unless we realize the psychic being? No, we will sing along the way. But there is a difference between singing along the way and singing fully moved by the Divine Mother's voice. So there is a little difference between the two. And truly speaking, the yoga, Sri Aurobindo's yoga, begins, as he has himself said, where other yogas end. So what is meant by that? Because there are so many paths of yoga, and yogis have worked toward the individual liberation, meaning thereby that we live in a zone of ignorance, and the more we believe we know, the more we are ignorant, as very beautifully it has been said in the Isha Upanishad, avigyatam vijanata, avigyatam avijanata. He who believes that he knows it not. And he who has not the thought of it knows it. So this cryptic verse describes the human state, because what we mean by knowledge is basically intellectual knowledge, mental knowledge, book knowledge. And while all this is a good preparation, we need to start somewhere. We need to hear, as the Upanishad says, first listen, hear, read, meditate. So we need to start somewhere. And since the mind is our one instrument, the eyes and ears are our, indriyas, the senses through which we can receive. So we begin to receive somewhere, in some way, this kind of knowledge as is being organized, for example, by wonderful Shaktikumbh, several Shaktikumbhs. So, but this is, in a certain sense, not even a beginning, or let us say just a prelude to a beginning. It is something like, let's say that somebody has given me a ticket to Pondicherry, and every day I keep seeing, oh, I have a ticket to Pondicherry. I may spend all my life with the ticket to Pondicherry and never really come. And that's the situation with many of us. And especially in India, this is a big problem, because from childhood, from the mother's milk, we soak spirituality, words like surrender, words like bhakti, but we assume that we know it. Whereas in real earnest, the yoga has not yet begun, because there is a big difference between intellectual knowledge and the realization of the truths, which is what yoga is about. So yoga is not a belief system. It's not about reading a book, believing in God, or, you know, having some bhakti. By bhakti, I mean going and praying and getting our boons fulfilled. Yoga begins when we take it that we can realize, become one with the divine. This is something very beautiful about Indian thought, unlike others, Semitic religions, let me put it like that, because all Indic religions believe in that. Indic thought believes that we are portions of the divine, and therefore not only we can unite with the divine, it's our birthright, sovereign birthright, Swarajya in the real sense, that we can unite with the divine. Just imagine what a wonderful opportunity and possibility. And the temple of the Lord is within us. So that's where we have to discover and unite with the divine through various ways, pathways. And the moment we unite with the divine, then life begins, as it is said. Till then we realize that we were like dead people. And so today itself, I was wondering, sometime when you look back at your own life, I mean, I can talk about my own life. And I was thinking, what kind of a dead person? And we thought we were living. Through all the schooling, college and friends and everything, you think you are living. And it's only when that discovery takes place, when the consciousness gets revered, then you say, oh, what a fool, ignore him. And it becomes so difficult, like sometimes now when somebody introduces me as an Air Force officer or a doctor, I wonder, kiski baat hai? Who is this that, you know, who is being talked about? But yes, that was a truth. That was a stepping stone, so it has its own place, one cannot deny. But real life begins, real yoga begins, real, at least Aurobindo's yoga begins, when this fundamental truth has been discovered, not just read. And this fundamental truth is that the Lord and myself, we are always together by what I call as myself. This is not myself as the ego, a moment's personality, but there is a truth of the individual. This is one of the beautiful things about Sri Aurobindo. And that individual is not just a practical device, as we see in Mayavad. That individual is not just an illusion, as we see in Buddhism. This individual is not just a kind of construct in a time and space, as we see in Jnana Yoga. This individual is a true, immortal, eternal individual who is one with the divine always. Divine has put him forth out of himself. It is always connected with the divine. But like is very beautifully described in Ramcharitmanas, that, you know, the jiva may look toward the world and forget that always the divine is with him or with it. But the moment he turns back, he discovers, oh, the Lord whom I was searching all over in temples, in gurudwaras, in mosques, and God knows where, always was within me. I was always with him and he was with me. So this is the fundamental realization which really liberates. That's what is called as mukti. Why it liberates? Because after that you cannot be fooled by any appearance. It's like other day someone was telling me that I can share a live example about friends. He said, you must be having many friends. So I said, in fact, I have only one friend. You won't. He said, what do you mean? I said, once you have discovered friendship with the divine, you may be with the whole world, but it's like after tasting the Rajbhog. Everything else, and somebody has used another simile, that if you have smelt Brahma Kamal, which comes out once in 12 years, then everything else appears as something which I won't even like to mention because it makes no meaning and sense. So real life begins when we have tasted the nectar, the beauty, the sweetness, the love of the divine and the wisdom that comes from there. So that's where yoga begins. Now this is the traditional path. So what is new about Sri Aurobindo? Is he talking about the same thing? No, that's where he says this is the beginning. And it has been accomplished so far through many paths, Jnana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Karma Yoga, Kundalini Yoga and countless yoga. But what after that? Because if the individual moksha is the end point, then what about this world? If where all my relations just a falsehood, is this world merely a falsehood? Now here comes Sri Aurobindo's new thing. No, it's not a falsehood in the sense that it's a non-existing reality. It's a falsehood because it doesn't translate into the real values what it is. It's a distortion. And there are so many examples one can take of the distortion. Say for example, when people love each other and get married. So what happens? Love is beautiful. They come together. But then where does the distortion comes in? Ego and desire. So as someone has put it in Hindi very nicely, in the beginning there is tu, you. And you. Then it comes main. And then it becomes tu, main. Those who understand. So the distortion comes because of the ego self and the desire. This is the basic thing. And if that can be corrected, removed, we can discover the truth of life, truth of our relationships, truth of this world, because everything at its back has, at its back there is a truth. That's how Sri Aurobindo says in Savitri, a truth occult has made this world. And if this truth is there in this world, it is struggling to manifest or trying to manifest, or it is manifesting progressively depending on these standpoints as he gives in the Life Divine we can take. But essentially, if you remove that, once again it recovers its true value, then life becomes beautiful, or we may say life begins. Because now we discover that all these things that came in were only distortions of something true. So this is the first thing that Sri Aurobindo teaches us, then one need not leave the world to find God. One need not have limited relations with the divine, limited concepts, limited philosophies, limited ideas about the divine to engage with him or come into contact with him. And then she says, Shobindo came to teach us that the divine is everywhere and in everything. And if we do not discover him, it is because we have not taken the care to discover him. And see how it starts. Starts with beliefs. Divine is there. And again, these are important at one point of time. There is a time when you cannot straight away discover the divine within. So you go to a place, you meet, you learn a path, or you have some faith, you read a book. So all these are the basic things. But once you discover the divine, you discover him everywhere and in everything. Now life begins to change. People often say, how does transformation proceed? I said, even this discovery, which is there in the Isha Upanishad, Sarva Bhuteshu Chatmanam Tato Na Vijugopsate, you will be afraid of nothing because everywhere there is the one divine self. You will not hate anyone. You will not fight with anyone. If somebody fights with you, you will say, Jai Matadi. If it's a lady, if it's a man, you will still say Jai Ma. Because mother is everywhere and in everyone. Does it mean that we will not engage in the real battle of the world? What about Kurukshetra? Yes, you will. But not based anymore on anything personal. Because it's not a fight of the ego. We see this classically in the Gita, where Sri Krishna tells Arjun, it's not your battle, excuse me. Even though if you fight it as your battle, it's justified. But here, there is a truth to manifest. And now you fight not just as the scion of, you know, Pandava who deserves the kingdom. All that is fine. If you fight with that motive, it's okay because you actually deserve half the prize. But you fight here as an instrument. Nimitta matra bhava sabhe sachi. You fight there as an instrument of the divine. And as an instrument of the divine, not for any personal purposes, not for any personal reasons, but because the divine is manifesting in this world through a lot of struggle. And why the divine is struggling? Because of the resistance offered by the past. So that's a long story. And I'll just say that in Indian thought, in the Vedas, there is a story of the eighth son of Aditi. See? Eighth son of Devaki, born in the jail. So there is eighth son of Aditi who is cast away into the darkness. And this eighth son slowly emerges and emerges powerfully struggling. He's a warrior son. He's called as Marthand. Reminds of something? In Jammu Kashmir, there is a Marthand temple. Yes, I have gone and visited there against everybody's advice. Because, you know, that whole area is infested with terrorists. It used to be, I don't know now. So, because that temple was brutally destroyed. The last was Lalitaditya, that family. And then the Mughals came and they destroyed it. But still you can feel that this was a place where yagya were conducted. So Marthand is that Godhead who is emerging, struggling within us. And that's why there is hope. Because whatever be the outer thing, this God will press from inside. He is the ray of the sun who is struggling to emerge. So this is the Godhead who is within us, whose temple we have to erect. Why? Because it's gone into ruins. So this is the basic background. And in that context, we come into the role of Bharat. Because when we use the word, as the topic is about role of Bharat and Odisha, if it is because of a patriotic sentiment, it doesn't carry much meaning, frankly, because, the whole world is there as the divine mother's child, and no civilization and no group of people can say that, you know, we are special children. One becomes a special child by really that surrender, that faith, by offering oneself. But having said that, in this play of the world, it is true that Arjun has a special place for Sri Krishna. And there is a reason for it. So Sri Aurobindo says in this Chatur Yoga at least, it is there in his beautiful writing, Yoga and its Object. In this Chatur Yoga at least, India has a special role to play. Who knows in the next cycle. But in this Chatur Yoga, India is the chosen place. It's like when you go up to a place where Yajna is being conducted. So you start with whole place is Yajna. But there is a Yajna Vedi. So there is a yajna, this whole world can be visualized as a Vishwa yajna. And it is a yajna. Why it is a yajna? Very simple. Everybody comes and puts something of his own. But what you will get, that is not sure. I may think that I will get this, but you have to put your effort. Yajna is the effort. And when you have put your effort, what you will get is not in proportion necessarily. You may get a lot, you may get nothing, you may get very little, because the fruits of yajna are decided by another logic. So that's what yajna is about. So India is a yajnavedi, and very interesting yajnavedi, because all kinds of forces have come here. The entire cosmos is represented here. That's why you will see the biggest enemies of India are not outside, they are within India. They have been called. That's the interesting part. They have been called, because where else they will go? All the asuras, rakshasas, they also have to find their own place. So only here the yajna is being conducted. And what is the process? The process is intensify the yajna. Some people get into all kinds of mock battle. Increase the fire of aspiration. This is the solution Mother gives. Each individual who aspires for oneself, for India, and of course for the good of the world, because this idea only exists in India. As far as I know, there is the idea of brotherhood in religion, but it is religion or brotherhood of my believers. But India is one place which uses the word Vasudeva Kutumbakam. So people will say, isn't Vasudev God? Vasudev is the one who dwells, the Godhead who dwells within the covering of creation. Vasu, Vas, Vastra, Vasan. It means that which covers. So he is the indwelling Godhead who dwells within creation, and that Godhead dwells in all. Vasudeva Kutumbakam. So this is the great lesson that India has to take to the world. It can solve the problems of the world. So much fight and all this to, you know, anyway, that's a long subject if I get into any all of these sub-subjects. But the essence is that the first thing we need to realize is the divine presence within us, without which no real work can be done, and the divine presence which is there in creation, in the cosmos. Having done that, this is the first step. I'm not going into details of. Having done that, then what do we do? Is it like I do prachar prasar, take around? That's where Odisha comes into prominence, because nowhere the work has spread like in Odisha. There is no doubt about it. And I can vouchsafe, having traveled to every state of India, having traveled to all the continents of the world except my long cherished wish of Antarctica. So, but I can say with certainty, you cannot imagine how blessed are the people of Odisha. Just, you know, that land, you go to a village and you see something or the other of Mother and Aurobindo. But is that the work? Now here we have to be a little careful, because we have to understand the subtle difference between a religious movement and a spiritual one. And Aurobindo cautions us and reminds us this, what we should always remember. I mean, it's wonderful, but we should always remember what Aurobindo describes in one of his essays in the Human Cycle. For the way that humanity deals with an ideal is to be satisfied with it as an aspiration, which is for the most part left only as an aspiration. So we go, do pranam and come back. After that, we discuss how's your dress, what's happening in your home. End of the story. Accepted only as a partial influence. So long back, I had written a story because of a bhav that, you know, God used to be inside the cupboard where you worship him. Then you, sometime back, you would say, then you close the cupboard. During the worship, you open the, because why? Because you have to use the room. This was the logic. So you don't want God to see all the nonsense that you are doing in the room. So there is a secret place, small little, you shut God. How long will you shut him? He is Vishapurusha. So slowly he started stepping. This is actually a trend I have actually seen through, you know. Then slowly you started putting a picture or something in. I'm not talking of certain families where this used to be the trendy thing, but there was a puja place, then slowly it became a puja room, then now God is in the rooms, then you have God in the lockets. Now God is, you know, everywhere. Now it has become trendy. People take pride that I am the follower of so and so. It's very interesting, because of what? that the divine is now spreading into the world. But we should be careful. It's not enough to say I am a follower. What is the use if I am a follower of Ram and I shiver in my pants at the sight of Ravan? What is the use of saying I am a follower of Sri Krishna, but I don't live for the great truth for which he, to what extent he goes in the Gita? I mean, even your own people, those whom you call as your own, that's the first lesson Arjuna has to learn. Very painful lesson. He says, these are the people whom you call as your own, for whom you are willing to renounce the kingdom. Are they your own? And slowly he discovered that, oh my God, I had never looked at life like this. So it's one thing to say I'm a follower of Krishna. Very difficult to live what Krishna wants. Because Krishna, you know, there is a very interesting story of Mirabai, that when she is outcast from the palace, she moves out with her idol of Krishna. And this idol is gold, idol of gold. And as it happens, she is sleeping at night below a tree. She is very happy, and that idol is stolen. Then she wakes up and cries. She says, this is the only possession I had, only thing I loved and cared for. And this has been stolen. Why have you done this to me? I never complained that you have outcast me from everywhere and everything. But this you have taken away, snatched away my last support. And then this has been very beautifully picturized by it. That play was also done here. Actually, Dilip Kumar Roy has written a whole episode on this, a play on this. That then Krishna comes to her and says, oh, really? You knew me? Now I'll tell you who I am. So when you read the Gita, you discover who Krishna is. And then it's difficult to say where he is not. This whole universe is flooded with Krishna. The whole universe is a manifestation of the divine progressively taking place in various ways. And we are a little bit of chinna role. We all have a part to play that he has given to us for our joy. Not that he needs us. So first thing is that not to merely have a lip service, because this is the danger when we are not ready. That's why spiritual teaching was never given prematurely. In ancient time, there was a process of initiation. Mother has written a whole story on this. That are you ready really for the spiritual life? This is the difference between religious life and spiritual life. Religious life is belief. Spiritual life is to live. And religious life is some rituals and ceremonies externally, bahya puja. But spiritual life is to have the darshan every day, if possible, every moment. There's Shobindo's words, actually. He says, yes, in the inner rooms, you can always have darshan of the Divine Mother. Even the Divine Mother says that while it's true that some people experience very special on the darshan because of various reasons, but she even says that nowadays we use the darshan day. I am just using because this is the day for, it's a very special day for all of us. So she says that nowadays I use this day because a lot of people come from outside to distribute the message, to spread the message. That's how message cards were being given. But otherwise, lot of dark forces gather around. Your mother's words. And then she says to celebrate the birth of a transitory body is special to a few exceptional individuals who have faith. But to celebrate the advent of a new world, the supramental world, is the rarest of rare privilege given to a few. So what is Mother doing actually through all this? Okay, we have centers, very nice. We have study circles. What is the real work? It's not just that I go and read and come back. It's not that I just make a center and do a darshan day meditation. Even some people do all kinds of activities. The real thing is, am I changing inside? And there is nobody who is there to judge or point out, and nobody should, because it's between me and the Divine Mother. Some people say it doesn't matter. We just will give them the book and let them decide. No, it's not like that, because it's, if a person is not ready, and this is how one has to understand, the need must come from inside. The Divine Mother knows when the need is ready. All of us have found our ways. She has led us and she will lead us. So while it is interesting to have the enthusiasm, it's very important to understand that whether this enthusiasm is operating under the vital, Because if it does that, it will become like a big bang, boom, and then it will start coming down. So Mother Shobindo has warned about it. He said, I don't believe in propaganda except for books and patent medicine. Of course, that's his sense of humor. Don't take it seriously. And then he says, for a serious work like mine, in fact, he said it means a boom, but for a serious work like mine, it is a dangerous poison. Because it means many who are not ready. You know, they join, they're not ready for the movement. They're not ready to take up this kind of sacrifice which any yoga. Because yoga is not easy. As the Upanishad says, Shurashya Dhara Nishita Duratya Kavyo Vedanti. You cannot keep your leg in two boats, you'll be split apart like Jarasandh. Jarasandhi tha na? Yeah. So you have to remember that in yoga, sooner or later a time comes when a decisive choice has to be made between the divine and all else. Does it mean leaving the divine world and becoming a sannyasi? No. Living for the divine in the world and within, for everything. Because divine manifestation is taking place in the world also. So living for the divine is a much more difficult, a serious task, and that's what we were reading. The ideal is not allowed to mold the whole life, but only more or less to color it. So in ancient times, we used to have a gerua. If you read the Bhagavad Puran, one of the roop that Indra assumes is, you know, that kind of dress. And he is revealed by Vasishtha Muni, this is falsehood. You destroy it. So we'll talk about it. So, and it is, that's why in the ashram you'll see there is no dress code. There is no beat people up. And people often wonder why. You don't even get to know who is an ashram inmate and not an ashram inmate. All these distinctions, the distinction is inside. And if it is not there, joining the ashram also has no meaning. And these are all not my words. They're all there in Mother Aurobindo's writings. So she says that people color it. It is often used even as a cover and a plea for things that are diametrically opposed to its real spirit. Institutions are created. We have entire Roman Empire and the church in Rome. Institution. Classic example of Mecca and the kind of nonsense that goes from there and the church and the conversions that go from there. Institutions are created which are supposed, but too lightly supposed, to embody that spirit. And the fact that the ideal is held, the fact that men live under its institutions is treated as sufficient. The holding of an ideal becomes almost an excuse for not living according to the ideal. The existence of its institutions is sufficient to abrogate the need of insisting on the spirit that made the institutions. If you read the ashram rules, there were no rules. After many years, people said, one rule, please. So Sri Aurobindo, out of one of letters of Sri Aurobindo, it was put as a rule. Now, of course, people have put rules, not very healthy, because that original rule was, which is the original rule of the ashram? Always behave as if the mother is looking at you, because she is indeed always present. Do nothing. Try to think and feel nothing. That will be unworthy of the divine presence. Whatever, it's called as the golden rule. So, but spirituality is in its very nature a thing subjective. You won't get to know by any outer things. A man may sit in meditation for years and yet be a Ravan. Ravan was doing that. He was even chopping off his head. But ultimately he turned out to be an extremely egoistic person. It is nothing if it is not lived inwardly and if the outward life does not flow out of this inward living. So most important is if one wants the mother's work, first step is discover the mother within. Live by what she wants us to live. And those who are sincere, they will know it. It's a long journey, no doubt. Because even when you have joined within, there are many parts in our nature. Mind will oppose, vital will resist, physical will do cha-chain, ka-chain, tutu, meme. But if you keep in mind that this is my yardstick, nothing else. Whether others are pleased or unhappy, that's not so important. This I must live by. Then slowly and slowly she will start changing things. She will change us. But we have to Be sincere to see, acknowledge and offer. This is the path. Symbols, types, conventions, ideas are not sufficient. A spiritual symbol is a meaningless ticket unless the thing symbolized is realized in the spirit. So we have mother's symbol. Why? How can, you know, we can wear it, we can put it on the scooter. People put it everywhere, outside the house, everywhere. But what does it mean? It means at the center now it is the Divine Mother. And if we don't do that, we are in for trouble. If you don't keep, somebody was asking me about marriage. I said, you know, Indian method of marriage is excellent. Why? Because at the center there is fire and you are going around. Says, so what's the big deal? I said, don't let either husband, wife, sas, sasur, anybody get in the center because he will burn first of all. Center is the fire of aspiration. There you must join. All the rest will flow. You may be very happy in the vital. You may be very happy emotionally to be together. You may be very happy holding hand. But if the center is not right, so first thing is to set the center right. Otherwise everything else becomes a convention. Even he says becomes a falsehood. A spiritual type may be a temporary mold into which spiritual living may flow. Spiritual type is all that sadhu, sannyasi, yogi and all that. But it is also a limitation because now you have what you have done. Now he is Yogi Raj. That's why, see, with Sri Aurobindo, there is no such epithet. Not even Maharishi, not even Yogi, nothing. Not even Avatar, which of course he is. Why? Somebody asked Sri Aurobindo. He said, let Sri Aurobindo be there, plain and simple. Why? Because he didn't want any of the old molds. He is representing the Superman, the supramental. There is no prefix. The Sri is not a prefix. It is part of the whole name. There is a whole thing of the mother. It's not Sri and there is a name. Sri Aurobindo. That's it. People try to put Maharishi, Mahayogi. That's past molds. They have their meaning. But they also create a limitation. And severe limitations. See, when Shankaracharya has to walk, he has so many limitations. He just can't just mix with commoners. He'll gate crash and, you know, then his action. But here, God works best when he hides in the mask of common humanity. So that's where, the again, Sri Aurobindo's words. And may become a prison in which it fossilizes and perishes. So difficult, no, to ask Swamiji is that please come and be part of, you know, a dance program going on. Mother used to attend all the dance program and art programs. She would used to correct, there is the dance going on, and then she says, no, no, there was a practice session, and she said, no, no, you have to be in that bhava. So this girl got into that bhava of Kali, and she was trembling, and at one point she threw the sword. At the end, Shobhadi. And that sword fell at mother's feet, broken into two. That kind of force. So if you are not embodying, everything can become an embodiment. At another point, she asked one of the persons, you are doing this role too much identified with the character. Be careful. Because it was a negative character. I won't name the person because he's still alive. So this is where we have to be very clear that everything can become a field of manifestation. Compare it with old yoga. Swami Vivekananda goes to attend a Raja's, Raja's Sabha. Probably it was Mysore Maharaja or someone in Gujarat, I may be mistaken. And there is a dance, quotation will dance, it was the way. So when the quotation came, Vivekananda got up and started moving away. Sounds good, no? What a yogi. And then this quotation sings. Says Prabhuji More. She sings a bhajan suddenly. She got inspired. Prabhuji More Avguna Chitna Dharo Samadarshi Hai Naam Tiharo. You know, Surdas Bhajan. Then he comes back. Then, why am I seeing? Still there is a duality. So he says that, but only when it is both inwardly and outwardly creative. So spiritual life is not about rejecting the outer life but transforming it. Right now, outer life is lived by the ego, for the ego, and is of the ego, expansion of the ego. It should change into outer life, and everything of life lived for the divine, by the divine, of the divine, for the manifestation of the divine. That's the change. That's the divine life. Here we have to enlarge and deepen the pragmatic principle that truth is what we create. And in this sense, first, that it is what we create within us. There is no spiritual life, there is no spreading unless this is realized. This was emphasized by Mother and Sri Aurobindo. In fact, she was asked, I want to spread yoga in America. Mother said, yoga cannot be spread by any outer means. It has to be lived inside. If you live inside, you will. It's like if you carry fire, everybody will have fire. If you take that artificial light and say, I have fire, fire, you will only spread smoke. So she says very clearly, undoubtedly, spiritual truth exists eternally beyond, independent of us. Now, this is the traditional yoga to discover it. But it is of no avail for humanity here. Now comes the Sri Aurobindo's yoga. It does not become truth of earth, truth of life, until it is lived. The divine perfection is always there above us, but for man to become divine in consciousness and act and to live inwardly and outwardly, the divine life is what is meant by spirituality. All lesser meanings given to the word are inadequate fumblings or impostures. And why? India has the secret to it. And Odisha is blessed to take the lead. And why? This we'll read from a passage from the mother. India is blessed because it has the secret. If you go back to the age of the Vedas, this was how it was lived. The rishis were warriors. They were teachers, educators. They were married. They had children. Great rishis. Vasishth, Vishwamitra, whose daughter becomes the scion of, you know, entire Chandravanshis. Shakuntala. And Shantanu, the entire, you know, Mahabharata, Kuru kingdom and Pandava is daughter of Vishwamitra. So these sages, they wrote poetry, they fought magnificently. Vishwamitra gives the training of warcraft to Lord Rama and Lakshmana. So they were not world shunning. This was the ancient India. Then it fell and Mayavad came and eclipsed, and now still we are struggling. Spiritual life is different from worldly life. So we have to rebuild that Bharat's. Not a Bharat where spiritual life is confined to a few ashramas and few temples and there are few special, you know, Mathadhish and there are few Mahamandaleshwar. No. The spiritual life of the common man. And that's what we see, that these things which are happening are a symbol that human consciousness is reacting to that old method where authority was by external chhatra. True authorities always has been in India by inner realization. When Yajnavalk walked into the Sabha of King Janak, and everybody has to now decide who is the greatest. So everybody is hesitant. Who will start the debate? And Yajnavalk says, take the cows. And they ask him, oh, you think you are the greatest? He says, I don't know. I have never competed with anyone. But I need the cows. Then they start. Gargi, who is a lady, she begins to ask questions. And at the end, we all know that whole thing, paucity of time, I'm not getting into that. And at the end, they all declare, yes, Yajnavalkya is a knower of Brahman. So it's not just because you are a saint and you have done this and therefore you are an accomplished person. It's something which you realize and it should flow in all your outward act. And that's why, so I come to what is special about now Odisha, which I have felt, last 25 years at least I've been traveling to so many centers I've been. And yes, it's a very blessed land. Very blessed. And I've given a talk also on that. And it still has the ancient sun temple of Konark. I've given a talk on that. Sri Aurobindo has written about Konark. There's a poem on Konark and something amazing. But again, resisting the temptation to go toward that. Of course, Odisha has relics of Sri Krishna in the Jagannath Puri. More than being one of the Tirthstan, it has relics of Sri Krishna. So that's a whole story which is something very interesting. And yes, Odisha is a land which has relation both to Sri Rama and Sri Krishna. I'll not say this, find out. What is its relation to Sri Krishna and Sri Rama? So in ancient times, what it was called. But anyways, there was a talk even on that. But what is special about Odisha, which I feel is what makes it really beautiful and special, and I pray that it never loses it, because see, onslaught of civilization is one thing. So she says, This is a prayer of February 12th, 1913. As soon as all effort disappears from a manifestation, it becomes very simple. With the simplicity of a flower opening, manifesting its beauty and spreading its fragrance without clamor or vehement gesture. This is the beauty. True spirituality has no need to spread. It spreads as a flower's fragrance spread. That's what Mother says, be a flower. Be like a flower. And I would say, a flower offered at that Mother's feet. Rest we don't have to worry. This is something which I have found in Odisha. All the rest, people often say, oh, you have to give a talk, preparation and all. No, it's not a gymnastic, it's not a mental, it's not a what is called as a show off your capacities. No, it should flow from the heart, depths of the heart. Flower doesn't prepare to spread its fragrance. It is there and it spreads. So spirituality, though I thank you for asking me if I have a PowerPoint presentation. I never have a PowerPoint presentation because we don't know what we are going to speak. It is up to her what she will speak. So one passage I had taken out, which I am reading, and I knew the prayer where it is. So, but this passage I had taken out when I thought of the people of Odisha, that too came very spontaneously. It was not thought out. That Mother, how would you like to look at the people of Odisha? There's a whole talk on that. But what she would, this my impression, because this is the answer that came spontaneously this morning, that Mother, what would you like me to say to the people of Odisha? Because I don't know, I can say so many things from here and there. So take it that this came to me literally as a Mother's guidance or a blessing, and it's from the prayers and meditation. And in Sri Aurobindo's, in the agenda, you'll see it several times when Mother goes and says, I have prepared the new creation. What do you want, Lord, to everybody? And Mother's, and Sri Aurobindo keeps telling her what the message that he should give to everyone is, be simple, be simple. If you Google search be simple, you'll find it in the agenda. Be simple, be simple. See, mind is so complicated. So, okay. So, manifesting its beauty and spreading its fragrance without clamor or vehement gesture. You don't have to go to a specific conference to spread. If a flower, wherever it goes, it will spread, no? It's beauty and radiance. Sun doesn't have to say, today is an auspicious day, I'm going to shine. It shines every day. You bathe in it or you sleep, that's your choice. And in this simplicity lies the greatest power. There is no makeup, there is no trying to project. The power which is least mixed. Mixed by what? Ego and desire. And least gives rise to harmful reactions. Wherever the ego comes, there will be harmful reactions. The power of the vitals should be mistrusted. And that's where she is pointing out. This prayer came to me in response to my prayer for Odisha. What would you want to? And spontaneously this prayer has come. So I'm just sharing it. And this morning. Morning means when I have gone to dispensary 8:30 onwards. I said, what prayer should I do for Odisha? And this is the prayer which has come. So we can take it as Mother's special blessing. But we have to be careful of what? The power of the vital. What does the vital do? Wants things to become a big movement. Same thing. Rises like a boom and then crashes. We should be careful. So she says, the power of the vital should be mistrusted. It is a tempter on the path of the work. I want to convert so many people. Oh, so many persons. Even that becomes an ego. No. We have to be quietly, that blossoming must take place. Ego and divine don't exist together. Throughout the life of Sri Krishna, there were only 5 persons who knew the divinity or felt the divinity. Today, you see, all over you have Krishna, Krishna. And there is always a risk of falling into its trap. For it gives you the taste of immediate results. Thousands of people gather. Wonderful. So she says it's a misleader, it's a tempter. This is not the way to go about, because it gives you the taste of, oh, so many people came, conference was a big success. Who knows? Maybe it's a big success, at least for the speaker, if nobody came. And he went back humbled and completely He discovered the ego of the speaker and how many people came. So it's so beautiful. It happened recently when I forgotten the place where I had gone somewhere. I think Bilai and Oscar Pelle. Anyways, I've even forgotten the place where. So they had called for conference, booked a hall and all. So as always, I was one of the first fellows to reach. I have a bad habit of reaching half an hour earlier, even on my own farewell party. So in Air Force, they used to say, "Arey, it's not done," because everybody feels embarrassed. So, Raipur. So when I reached there, nobody was there and the people were very apologetic. The organizer said, "Sir, I'm sorry, even the organizer has not come." I said, "Don't worry. Don't worry, I'm enjoying thoroughly." No, sir, we are hoping, expecting somebody will come." I said, "Don't hope and expect anything, just be in joy. You have come here for mother. How does it matter?" So, of course, people came. And people in India have a bad habit. They think 10 o'clock means 11 o'clock. Somehow it has gone into the mind. Indian style. So they were saying, "Shall we start a little late?" I said, "Nothing doing. Mother is here, we start on time. Let people learn. Doesn't matter. Mother is here. That's all that is important. We are not doing a show. We are doing it for mother as an offering, and mother would be here and we should do it on time." So we started. By then maybe 15-20 had come. Some, most of them last minute. But by the time we finished, so many had come. Called by the mother. But it was a lesson that, look here. It's not like 10 means 10-15. So that joyous flower doesn't bloom waiting for those who will come and appreciate and have the fragrance. It blooms at the contact of the sun. Rest is destiny. In our first eagerness to do the work well, we let ourselves be carried away to make use of this power. But very soon it deflects all our action from the right course and introduces a seed of illusion and death into what we do. What has happened to religions? Shobindo says, this has been the reason why religions have fallen into this. It starts from a truth, but slowly only an empty cell remains, and the throne of truth which has been vacated is occupied by forces of falsehood. Exactly the story of religions. Starts with a boom and see today what's happened. We all know it. We don't need to. In India, the saving grace is yoga, that, well, you can unite with the divine. Therefore, that beyond the priest, there is always the yogi. So you priest cannot challenge a yogi. So this always used to be. So she says, what is the way forward? Simplicity, simplicity. Simplicity is to be what you are. No show, no sham. No trying to put up a nice mask. No trying to put a, you know, this, that, tripundi, tika, mala and dress. What is the dress we should wear? Mother, mother, mother. What should be the color of the dress? Mother, whatever she chooses. That dress we should wear. So simplicity, simplicity. Ego and simplicity don't go together. Mind and simplicity don't go together. We should remember. Simplicity, simplicity. How sweet is the purity of thy presence. With this prayer, especially for Odisha, for this wonderful event, and for India, that, you know, what it should, it has to be a role model for the world, because this has been chosen, is the Yajna Vedi of the divine. And India has the secret. But to, on closing note, I must say, it must come out of the spell of Mayavad. It must enter into the age of the Vedas, when world and God, to use the language of Savitri, were true and one. So India has to recover the yoga of the Vedas, not the chanting of the Vedas, that's there, but the yoga of the Vedas, which is not about Mayavad. Even Upanishads take up the knowledge part. But the truth of the Vedas is an integral truth, connects us with the world, reality. In every sphere, the divine is there and should be there and must manifest in all our manifold relations and workings of life. Jema.
Thank you, Alokji, for taking us straight to the heart of the genius, the essence of Orissa, as you found it, simplicity and purity. And I was describing to the group yesterday, I went looking for a singara, samosa. I didn't find it, but the people on the streets, the vendors, that simplicity, that you can't describe it, you can only experience it. And there's something about the common Odia that just for, as you say, like a flower is not attempting to have a certain fragrance or a certain bloom. It just is being itself, and you experience it. So that's my experience of the common person.
Yes, yes.
Once, long ago, I had asked you this question, and you had also said it's a land where the psychic being is very open because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has sang and danced there.
Yes.
Do you want to say a little bit about that?
Yes, that is true. That's why I just referred to the talk on Odisha, in which I have mentioned about the special action of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was an ansavatar of Sri Krishna. And it has done a lot in the land. And second is the constitution of the Odisha people. Every place there is something unique. But in Odisha, there is a very good combination of bhakti and seva. It is the most powerful entry into the divine. And those who try to enter through the mind, it takes long. I mean, knowledge is there, very intuitive knowledge. But it's mainly through bhakti and seva, and that too through seva. So seva is integral. It's like the works. And that's my experience even here in the ashram, that through seva and bhakti, Odisha is really blessed. And surely it is one of the influences, great influences, is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The whole talk on that, yes.
I think the mother is English. Sri Aurobindo is Bengali. How come it's the Odias, who are so drawn? And I think she had said that the Bengali is very intellectual. And maybe it takes longer to reach the psychic being. Your first caught in the mind.
Right? Yes, yes. That is true. That through the heart, the mother has said, the heart has wings. So, approaching through the heart is to make the process very swift. The mind makes it very complicated. In fact, it puts barriers by saying, if you do this, then you will get connected. That's the first barrier. The fact that you give a process to connect itself becomes a barrier. Who is everywhere, in everything? But that's how the mind operates. It needs something to hold on to. So a process can be used as a scaffolding. But where we forget that the truth does not depend or wait for the process. A process can help, and everybody must discover his own process. But when process becomes the most important, then it's like, unless I kneel down and lift my hand upward, God won't be happy. Now that's where we have to be careful. It's a very subtle distinction.
So we are at the end of our time, but if there's any one question, we could take it or comment. I would like to then ask, can you speak about psychic being? Because we started and a few people were not in the room. And so just to close and circle back to that the bridge. And therefore, just like the psychic being is the bridge between the personal and the universal, the mother is also the greater bridge between the creation and the creator. So the psychic being and the mother being two sides of that function.
So something on the psychic being you want me to, yeah.
Okay. Yes, yes. Because this is a term Sri Aurobindo.
Yes. So psychic being is the mother's child in us, the true child. Not like I may say that I am mother's child. That may be the ego speaking. But the psychic being is the true child of the mother, and its sign is that it recognizes the mother. Like a baby, you see, when a baby is born, you don't have to tell the baby, this is your mama. If you try to intellectualize, baby will be very confused. He is surrounded by a whole lot of women, men, even the dai is there. But the baby recognizes the mother. Something is there, something about the contact, the voice, and the baby understands. So similarly, the first thing about the psychic being is it recognizes the mother. And the mother has summed it up very beautifully in one short sentence. She says, when I say I have initiated someone, because in this yoga people ask there is no initiation, what does it mean? So mother says, when I say I have initiated someone, it means that I have made myself known to the person. You may talk about mother, give any amount of intellectual reasoning, but the day the psychic is touched, he knows, oh, she is the divine mother. I know about my own experience. I picked up randomly a book from Calcutta, train was going to leave, and I picked up, I had just heard about mother, read about mother from Sri Aurobindo's writing. I didn't know any clue about, just randomly someone showed a photograph, but nothing else, no other information, luckily. So I said, oh, I must see if there is a book of the mother. So I rushed in Calcutta, Howrah Junction, to the stall, and he said, this is the book, and it was Sri Aurobindo's The Mother. It was not a book by the mother. I rushed because train was going to leave, and I sat. As I read the book, all through it was in my mind, it's about the mother whom I have actually picture I have seen. Never it came that it's about some other mother or somebody, because the psychic being recognizes automatically. You don't have to tell it. So this is the first part of it. Psychic feeling is always of love, bhakti, surrender, unconditional. It doesn't demand. In fact, it takes joy in giving itself. It doesn't question. So it doesn't, okay, if she is the mother, then why? Oh, Sri Aurobindo, all this. Oh, she was. This will not come. I remember once coming here, and I can now mention the name. Whose else? Hutadi. She took very fondness to me, and one day I had gone, and she started saying, when the mother was here. So, both Kavita was there. She first stopped her, and I knew what's going to come next. So I intervened to prevent explosion. So I said, Hudadi, please don't say mother was here, because we have never felt she was. I have always felt she is here. Then she got a little perplexed. She said, no, you have not seen her. I said, I have seen her also, but not with these physical eyes. It was strange for her, because not seeing her, but not with these physical eyes, her being very real, and because she is real. She never, even now I find it very strange. So I was writing something on the mother. I said, people normally say born on 21st February 73, when mother herself has said, I have never left the earth since its inception. And it has been my own experience of, in so many ways, but that's a long story. And never felt that she is not there. Such interventions, it's like unimaginable. She is closer than probably, you have to write a letter and she will receive it. So you see, psychic being instantly connects like that. So it doesn't need proofs. It doesn't have wants or like the vital. Mind needs proofs, vital based on what I get. And the psychic being knows, even if the whole world is snatched away, it will say, thank God you have snatched away all that came between you and me. It will not say, oh, you are my mother, divine mother. People say you have all the power. Why did you do it? Because psychic faith is that kind of faith. So when that faith, love, bhakti, surrender awakens, know that you have touched the real core and the soul is fully awake. Of course, there are many more things. There is a spontaneous knowledge which comes through the psychic, which bypasses the entire mind. It's an intuitive knowledge. There is an intuitive discernment between the true and the false. You cannot fool the psychic being. You may assume any appearances, but it cannot be cheated, fooled. And you may choose to turn a blind eye. That's a different thing altogether. So there are many aspects of the psychic being, but this is the most important one.
Chema, chema.